We now return to Marlowe Thomas, starring in Nobody's Child.
Ah, welcome back, Joe Radio, 800-636-1067, joeradio1067 at AOL.com, and on the MySpace, Joe Radio 1067. Well, the hour is at hand, my friends, my fellow Joe-Americans. My guest is Alec Rawls. Alec, are you there?
Joe Radio!
Hey, Alec, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, Joe? Doing good.
All right, let me just pod down the music. Alec, in all my notes, I had omitted the title of your book, so let's just get that out in the open.
The Crescent of Betrayal.
Ah, The Crescent of Betrayal.
And your readers can actually download a pretty final draft of it. We wanted to get this information out at crescentofbetrayal.com. So that's going to be available until the print edition comes out.
All right, so we got that out there now. I'm going to lead you into this, and I'm going to turn you loose. What Alec found out was that the memorial to the Flight 93 victims on September 11th actually more than resembles a crescent, an Islamic crescent, and in fact virtually points towards Mecca. Now, Alec, when I found your website, I thought it was some kind of joke. So let's just, from the very get-go, how did you find out about this kind of thing?
Well, there was initially quite a big controversy that made national news back in September 2005 when what was called the Crescent of Embrace Memorial to Flight 93 was first unveiled. And the publicity photo showed what appeared to be a bare-naked crescent and star flag planted on the crash site with a huge Islamic-shaped crescent that's almost a mile across.
Mm-hmm.
And then between the tips of the crescent was this memorial plaza, which marks the spot where the crash site, where Flight 93 crashed. Now, that's the exact position of the star on an Islamic crescent and star flag is centered between the crescent tips. So, I mean, it was just overt Islamic symbolism, and many people immediately said, what? You know, this is a giant Islamic crescent. A smaller proportion recognized that it was a crescent, actually a whole crescent and star flag configuration, but the initial controversy in the paper was that there was this giant Islamic-shaped crescent on the crash site. And the memorial project at first did not, they just wanted to dismiss the criticism. But at that time, Representative Tom Tancredo from Colorado weighed in and said, you know, come on, this is the symbol that the hijackers of Flight 93 claimed as their own. These were Islamic terrorists. This is in the shape of an Islamic flag. You can't do that, whether it's intentional or not. You can't put that symbol on those people's graves.
Right. So who designed this? Whose name is on this?
It's an architect named Paul Murdoch, who's from Los Angeles. I haven't been able to find out anything about him. I only know what he did, so I don't know his motivation. But
he's a mystery person. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty, if you look at, there's a little bit of his resume online, and he's kind of he appears to be just your normal touchy-feely, eco-conscious type.
Okay.
but clearly there's a lot more going on. I mean, as you get into the details of this, there's numerous proofs of intent. This is indeed a memorial to the terrorists.
Give me some examples. I don't want to rush, but you've been following this from the beginning, so when these people are objected to this, why can't it just be changed? Why can't we just have like a granite wall or something?
They don't want to change it, and they should. They should just acknowledge that these things are terribly inappropriate, even whether or not they're intentional. They don't have to go into the question of intent. I mean, that you have to get into the details to see that it's intentional. But you don't have to get into the details to see that this symbolism is terribly wrong, no matter whether it's intended or not. So,
how about some of those details? Give us some examples.
Well, the first startling detail came out about 2 days after the design was unveiled, was discovered by, actually by commentators at Charles Johnson's Little Green Footballs website. He gets these massive comment threads where people share information, and somebody suggested that, I bet it points to Mecca. And so somebody went, and they found that, sure enough, it points to Mecca. To define the orientation of a crescent, what you do is you connect the crescent tips and you go to the midpoint. So you stand at the midpoint between the crescent tips and you face into the center of the crescent. If you do that, you will be facing 1.8 degrees north of Mecca.
Wow.
Give or take a tenth of a degree. So it's quite precisely oriented on Mecca. And now, most Americans don't know what that means. I didn't know what it meant.
I don't know what it means.
Right, but a commentator on my blog, I verified. I was one of a half dozen bloggers who verified that Mecca orientation back in September 2005. And then a commentator on my blog named Joel Nathan, he put a comment that said, That's what's called a mihrab. If you go into any mosque in the world, at the head of the mosque, there's a Mecca direction indicator called a mihrab. It's the central feature around which every mosque is built. And sure enough, I looked into it. That's what this is. And the simplest example of a mihrab, which all of your listeners would be familiar with, is an Islamic prayer rug, which is called in Arabic a musalla, which translates in English into small mosque. So, and all it is a Mecca direction indicator. You lay out the rug facing Mecca. So this Mecca direction indicator is the essential defining feature of a mosque.
Is a mihrab always a crescent?
They can come in a couple different shapes. The archetypical mihrab is crescent shaped. That would be the mihrab at the Prophet's Mosque in Medina,
okay,
in Saudi Arabia. They're often also can be arch shaped. So those are the two most common, either a crescent or an arch.
All right. Well, keep going. Any other details as this unfolded?
So when I started looking into the plans, I started following the, I'll tell you what I did was I looked at the position of the what looked to be the star on the flag, and I noticed that it wasn't quite exactly between the crescent tips.
Right.
And so the bisector of this crescent, which I calculated, I saw that it went through about the upper third of what's called the Memorial Plaza, down between the crescent tips. So I said, the star's not quite centered. I wondered if there was a separate feature that was centered, if I went and looked inside the detailed drawings for that Memorial Plaza.
Right.
Well, sure enough, it turns out that there's a separate upper section of Memorial Wall centered exactly on the bisector of the giant crescent. And take a guess what's inscribed on that wall.
I'm speechless about this entire thing. Tell me.
The date, September 11th, 2001, is inscribed on that date. So the date goes to the star on the Islamic flag. The date goes to the terrorists.
Goes right in the center there.
Well,
right where the star would be, which is a little off-center. And tell us about there are glass tiles or...
glass blocks, that's right.
Right, memorial, and those, there's a certain amount of them in honor of the victims.
Right, so when I found that upper section of wall inscribed with the 9/11 date... The date is inscribed on three glass blocks.
Right.
That are set into that wall. Well, there's also a separate lower section of Memorial Wall that has 40 inscribed glass blocks, one for each of the murdered passengers and crew. That was pretty suspicious to me. Okay, we got these glass blocks. Glass blocks are specifically designated to represent individual lives.
Right.
And we've got 43 of them on the flight path. This memorial wall is built along the flight path that Flight 93 came in on as it went down to the impact point.
Right.
So I said, well, you know, if this is supposed to be a memorial of the terrorists, then I would expect to find a 44th glass block also on the flight path.
Right.
So what I did was I just looked at the site plan and saw the flight path is a central organizing feature of the whole design. In the architect's explanation, as the flight path comes in, that represents, it comes across the upper crescent tip, and it breaks the circle, turning it into this giant crescent. So the idea is the terrorists broke our humanitarian circle, turned it into this big crescent. That's pretty suspicious there that you're going to celebrate this, right?
Yeah, I mean,
a crescent.
Just having that as, you know, your symbolism is... It's astounding.
Yeah. Nobody just goes, wait a minute.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the flight path first comes across that upper crescent tip, then it follows the path of these memorial walls down into the impact site, and those are all right down between the crescent tips. So after looking at the Memorial Plaza down between the crescent tips, I went and looked at a detailed drawing of the upper crescent tip where the flight path comes in.
Right.
And sure enough, at the end of what's called this entry portal walkway that is showing you dramatically the flight path breaking the circle, creating the upper crescent tip.
Right.
There's a giant glass block at the end of that walkway that dedicates the entire site. And it's going to be inscribed a field of honor forever.
Wow.
So there are 44 inscribed memorial glass blocks implanted along the flight path, and there were 40 passengers and crew and 4 terrorists on that airplane.
Wow. And so where does it stand now? I mean, it hasn't been built yet, has it? I mean, this is how little I know about this thing.
No, it hasn't been built yet. We've been trying to get this out since 2005, and
okay,
get the word out. But this thing has just been like a train, just going down the tracks, and the Park Service has gone through an internal investigation that goes to the highest levels of the Park Service. You just absolutely would be stunned by the details of how fraudulent. Just as I've continued to push this and to try to get these facts out in the public, get news coverage. The news coverage has not gotten out of Western Pennsylvania, but it has gotten, the people in Western Pennsylvania know what's going on now.
Right.
The rest of the country doesn't.
Well, now, if they know what's going on, how come they can't generate an outcry? Why isn't Katie Couric down there? Any of these national media?
Well, the media has played a central role in suppressing this story.
Any reason, any idea why?
I know why with some of the papers. I know with the Pittsburgh papers that it's political. So here's what happened with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Okay.
I learned from one of their reporters, this was in the spring of 2006. Had a conversation with Paula Ward, and she spilled the beans about the Post Gazette having known about the Mecca orientation of the crescent back in September 2005, at the height of the initial controversy over the crescent.
Right.
She said that they saw all the blog posts that had done this verification, and she said yours is probably one of them. And she told me that they had a top-level editorial meeting with the reporters and the editors, and they made a collective the editors made this decision that they would not publish this information. But I know what they were publishing in their paper at that time. They were publishing editorials that said anybody who's characterizing this crescent as anything but innocent, they're a bunch of right-wing bigots.
Right.
They were being very explicit. They were making this political. They saw this as an opportunity to attack who they considered their political opposition, the right-wing bigots.
Okay.
it stuns me. I mean, how can, why does that, why would anybody want to make this the Democrat position that, that you're okay with this giant crescent? But
right.
But this guy, Tom Birdsong, who's the editor of the Post-Gazette, is a radical leftist. I mean, he's not just your typical Democrat. He's a far left guy, and this was the position they took. And that's what would seem to be the explanation. I mean, what other explanation could there be that they had chosen this editorial line? You can read it in their paper, and they didn't want to publish anything that conflicted with it.
Wow.
And that's what the major papers there have done. The Pittsburgh Tribune Review has been pretty similar. And there they had a managing editor, Bob Fryer, who I had interactions with, who said to me, like, one of his statements was, "I don't buy your conclusion, so I'm not going to look at your facts."
Well, now, why hasn't see, my show is, it's just 2 hours a week. It's a small show. It's a new show too. But how come someone like Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity hasn't jumped on this?
I think a lot of people are scared because the Memorial Project had heavy involvement from Flight 93 families. And they see this as casting aspersions on them. The families are divided. Tom Burnett Sr., whose son Tom Jr. was one of the heroes of Flight 93,
right.
He's backing me publicly, and he's calling for congressional investigation. That's been a big help. But there have also been a number of Flight 93 family members being very publicly on the other side, and I think that scares a lot of people. They're not going to take positions on something that's going to be contradicting these Flight 93 family members unless they know the facts.
Do you know the people that support the families that support this design? Do they have any reason? I mean, are you aware of any statements they've made as far as supporting this type of design?
Yeah, they've made a bunch of public statements. But I do know where it comes from. I mean, they were misled by the Memorial Project from the beginning.
Okay.
I know this because the Burnetts, who I've been in contact with, have received the communications from the Memorial Project. And Tom Sr. tells me that, you know, that they sent out various communiques to all the families telling them about this crazy guy who's making these crazy accusations and that they've thoroughly investigated it and it's all phony and that, you know, nobody should bother to look at any of this. And the families trusted that. So
right.
You've got all these family members who were warned away from ever looking at this information, and they think, because they were told by people who they trust, that I'm just telling all this crazy stuff that's not true. The fact is, everybody involved in the Memorial Project knows the factual accuracy of all of my claims. They know that this giant crescent points to Mecca.
Let me jump right in there, too. There's a lot of things associated with 9/11 that are on the fringe. There's a lot of things that aren't so on the fringe. This is blatantly right in people's faces. Are, as a society, are we even ready to deal with 9/11? Have we confronted it like you know, you're supposed to confront things and get past them?
Right, you're right. It definitely has those larger implications for the. I mean, Flight 93 is supposed to be the symbol of our woken vigilance.
Right.
We are supposed to understand now that we are in a war with Islamic terrorists whose nature is to hide amongst us, pretending to be trustworthy friends. Now we've got somebody comes and warns these people. This guy pretending to be a trustworthy friend is engaging in a plot to plant a giant terrorist memorial mosque on the Flight 93 crash site. He's hijacked this memorial. It's on target to reach that goal, stabbing this terrorist memorial mosque into America's heartland. And you try to warn them, and they act as if this the whole idea of vigilance is just completely alien to them. They refuse to look at the facts. They go, gee, that, you know, that sounds like a conspiracy to me, and only crazy people believe in conspiracies, right? Hey, dude, do you know what 9/11 was one of the most elaborate conspiracies in history? We're supposed to understand now. Yeah. This is the nature of our enemy.
A secret plan is a conspiracy for all my listeners, by the way. So don't be afraid of the word conspiracy, and don't let people use it to paint you as some kind of kook. But my point is this crescent is right in our faces. This just doesn't seem like you can just cast this off as some crazy rantings of a nutcase.
And anybody can verify it for themselves. All of these features are trivially easy to verify. The online resources for checking this stuff,
go ahead and give a bunch of information, because I've had a lot of interest in this. So just take a second and give some people some sites to go to.
Okay, well, I've been posting updates on the story on my Error Theory blog. So that's at errortheory.blogspot.
And that's a good one. That's the one I found originally.
Uh-huh. So that's where updates are going. And if you Google anything about this now, you'll find all kinds of, there's about 45 blogs at this point that are posting weekly blog bursts, mostly written by me. But other people are other bloggers are at this point trying to help me get the word out. There's Keys blog and Flopping Aces and Fort Knox and Traction Control and a whole bunch of really cool blogs. They're mostly the big players are not jumping in. I mean, Charles Johnson was very helpful at the beginning, but Little Green Footballs hasn't posted on this in 2 years. Michelle Malkin hasn't posted on it since 2005.
Yeah, I was going to mention that you were on her show. I never heard, I don't really listen to her, but I never heard anything of it. And she's a big name.
Well, it's that issue. It's the issue with all of the big people is they're incredibly busy people, and given that the Flight 93 families are divided on this, they can't take a position unless they take the time to look at the facts, and they're too busy to look at facts. I mean, it really reveals a weakness of the new media that we're relying so much on a very limited number of people to direct 95% of the traffic, and those busy people can't cover a story that requires them to check the facts. They don't have the time. So it is a very revealing story that way. And that's allowed the old media to have the advantage on this, that the suppression of this story by papers like the Post-Gazette is able to take hold because the bigger people on the right are too busy to check the facts and know their ground that they should be exposing this.
Wow. And this is an aside, but I'm not really casting aspersions on the people of Pennsylvania, but my car broke down in central Pennsylvania, and you do not want to be out in those mountains after the sun goes down. There's a very tight community for a very large state out there.
It's a real rural America out there.
Yeah, it is.
It's beautiful country in the summer. I think they have a tough winter, like all the Northeast.
Yeah, tell me about it. That's where I am now.
Yeah, but it's absolutely beautiful country, and people should go out and visit that site. It's awesome. And to see, you know, that where these heroes won that battle, it's very moving.
So where does it stand now? Where are you now with this?
They're going to be building the thing starting any time. They gave it final approval at a meeting last July, the Memorial Project did in the Park Service.
Uh-huh.
And they would just needed to complete then their construction drawings, which should be done by now. I asked them to give me word, but they don't like to cooperate with me.
Yeah, I don't think they really like hearing from you.
Yeah, not too happy to hear from me.
I noticed, I read either in your blog or on your website that they're having trouble raising the money for it, so it might not get built for a while.
That's right. I mean, the people of Pennsylvania, they've gotten the word, and they are not contributing. I mean, it's just dead in the water.
Good.
And the interesting thing now is is whether the representatives, I mean, here you've got this interest, this really, it's almost a bizarre situation where the people are aware, and the politicians are neither leading nor following. I mean, they should have taken the lead on this, but now even when the people are aware and the people want it investigated and the people want it stopped, the politicians still are dead in their tracks. There's a lot of politics there. In the local area, the entire memorial project was staffed by the Somerset County Board of Supervisors. So all of the local powers that be were involved in this. And they shouldn't be taking this personally. I mean, the details of what's in the design were not known when the design was picked.
Right.
So, I mean, they shouldn't. I mean, nobody's accusing them of intentionally picking a terrorist memorial mosque with all these clear Islamic proofs in it. I mean, that is a little bit crazy, maybe, for them to pick something that was a crescent at all.
Yeah.
But you know, there's no aspersions. Anybody meant any of the really damning things that have been discovered in this. But nevertheless, I mean, it's just the nature of politics, I guess, or in this case at least, that you've got all the local powers that be are involved in this, and they don't want aspersions cast on the decisions that they made and what the process led to.
That's true. I can tell you, I've lived in Washington all my life. I mean, if you want a broader example, just look at how unpopular the Republicans and our president are. What do? We elect Democrats into the Senate, and they do nothing. It's business as usual. But this is such a glaring thing. Now, I wanted to ask you about, there's some trees in the memorial, right? And was there a significance to those, like, four trees that are in the memorial?
Well, there were supposed to be 40 memorial groves, and this is around the. These are kind of form a thick rear section of this giant crescent. It's asymmetric, a little bit asymmetric with the full crescent.
Right.
But in the rear, there's this strip of 40. What was supposed to be 40 memorial groves, but there are only 38. And that's where, I mean, you're really getting into the details of this terrorist memorializing iconography to go into that. What it is this giant crescent being the central feature of a mosque, it turns out there's a dozen typical mosque features, and that all of them can be realized in this design, all on the same epic scale as this mile-wide mihrab.
Give us some examples.
Okay, there's this 93-foot-tall minaret.
Oh, yeah, I forgot all about that.
The Tower of Voices. And it turns out it's a crescent-shaped tower. It's formed in the shape of an extruded crescent, and it's surrounded by a vast array of crescents of trees. So this design is just crescent after crescent after crescent. It's all crescents. And it turns out that when the shadow of the Tower of Voices reaches the innermost arc of trees, it's time for Islamic afternoon prayers.
Wow.
So Islamic prayer times are traditionally determined by sundial. And this is a giant Islamic sundial. Again, it's 100 times larger than any other Islamic sundial ever seen in the world. Just like the mihrab is 100 times bigger than any other mihrab ever.
This is way beyond coincidence. The designer can't say, oh, these are coincidences.
No, yeah, absolutely not. No way. I mean, an Islamic sundial is a very precise structure. It's not like our Western sundials where times are determined by shadow angle.
Right.
Because shadow angle, I mean, you can take any upright shadow caster and just mark the correct shadow angles around it, and it becomes a sundial.
Right.
But an Islamic sundial is very different. Islamic prayer times are determined by shadow length. So to create when afternoon prayers commence, when a shadow caster's shadow is the length of its noon shadow plus its height. So, and as the days get longer, the shadows lengthen quicker. You know, the prayer times occur earlier. So, at different when the you get what you get traced out is this very specific arc. And there's absolutely no way in the world you could ever get that by accident. It's just, it's a very specific construct.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. It's a giant Islamic sundial. I mean, all these precise sundial calculations. Hey, this architect is a genius. I mean, he worked everything out in this.
That's what I was going to say. Here, I'm having you on just because, well, it looks like a crescent and it does point to Mecca. Now you're telling me that it's a functioning prayer clock.
Yeah.
So does it? Wouldn't that just invite Islamists to come out to Shanksville and start praying out there?
Oh, of course.
That could be. I'm speechless. Go ahead. Keep talking.
Okay. So. Well, we got onto that subject. I was going to talk about the 40 memorial groves, right?
Right. Sorry about that.
So the idea that this whole thing is a giant mosque, well, that presented a really difficult problem. Now, we're going to see how brilliant this architect is. This is evil genius, like, to the max.
Okay.
He was faced with a really difficult problem. He was designing a terrorist memorial mosque that was nominally a tribute to these 40 infidels. Now, infidels, if you were to look in the Quran, infidels are not even allowed in mosques.
Right.
How are you going to put those infidels nominally into your mosque without tainting your mosque and still have it be a proper mosque? Well, this is where the genius of the game, he did it right in the very foundations of the whole design. It's this crescent and star configuration, right?
Right.
That crescent and star represents the Islamic heavens. Well, if you look at where he places all of the elements that memorialize the terrorists, they're all placed in the Islamic heavens. Remember, that upper section of Memorial Wall is in the position of the star.
Right.
On the Islamic crescent star. That flag, that has three of those extra glass blocks.
Right.
The fourth extra glass block is at the upper crescent tip, so it's part of the crescent. That's also part of the Islamic heavens. So all of the terrorists are memorialized in the Islamic heavens. The infidels are in a separate section of wall that is outside of the Islamic heavens. And in Islam, there's only heaven and hell. If you don't go to heaven, you go to hell. So the infidels are symbolically damned to hell in his design. And that's how he's brilliant. That's how he was able to figure out how to put these 40 infidels in his mosque without turning it into an improper mosque. The infidels are all damned to hell, symbolically, in his design.
Oh, you're making my head spin. It's
absolutely brilliant.
It's not just the cold I have. You're making my head spin.
Okay, now get this. Then we get to the question of the 40 memorial groves. Well, there's no way, since the 40 memorial groves are part of the giant crescent, you can't put groves that are numbered to memorialize the 40 infidels in the crescent, because that's part of the Islamic heavens. You can't put the infidels in the heavens. So if you look closely, though, you count the groves, there's only 38. So what's he up to? He can't be memorializing the infidels, because that would taint his mosque.
Right.
Who is he memorializing? What is that 30? What the hell? 38. What does 38 mean? Well, if you remember that the crescent, the big crescent points to Mecca.
Right.
Well, there's this fat rear section of the giant crescent is off center from the big crescent. It's not aligned with it. It points somewhere else. Well, it turns out if you draw a line across the tips of the fat rear crescent,
yeah,
points to the White House.
Really?
Yep. Right on the White House lawn. Bingo. Now, take away, so you've got 38 memorial groves pointing to the White House. Take away two of those. What you have left is a crescent of 38, excuse me.
36.
36.
Mm-hmm.
That's also going to point to the White House, because you took off one grove at each end. It's going to be parallel to the first line.
Right.
Take off another two. You've got 32 and another line parallel. It's also pointing to the White House. Keep doing that. You've got 38 divided in half. You've got 19. He's memorializing the 19 terrorists.
Wow.
Of 9/11. And then you go, okay, you're right, that's okay. Okay, that's kind of a reach, right? I mean, you'd at least you want some confirmation of that. Well, he provides confirmation for everything. You go up to up to the Tower of Voices. Remember how I said it's surrounded by a vast array of crescents of trees?
Yes.
19. Wow. 19 nested crescents. So he has two sets of 19 nested crescents in his design. And that's how he confirms that, yeah, that's what he meant. He uses, over and over again, he uses the Tower of Voices part of the memorial to confirm. He reproduces what he did in the central crescent as a way of confirming that the intent of it.
Wow.
it's stunning what the guy did. So you want to know? So I said everywhere where the 40 infidels are placed in the design, they're depicted as symbolically damned.
Mm-hmm.
The most disgusting occurs in the Tower of Voices. So it's this giant 93 foot tall is extruded crescent.
Let's not forget it's also the needle for the prayer dial.
Right. That's right. Now the top of this thing is cut at an angle, so the arms of the crescent reach up into the sky.
Yeah.
If you look at mosques, in many Muslim countries, they'll have crescents on the top with the crescent arms reaching up into the sky. Well, what the architect did was he put a bar across, and he literally hangs from this Islamic crescent up in the sky representing the Islamic heavens. Literally hanging from the Islamic heavens are 40 wind chimes representing the 40 infidels.
Wow.
And they're going to gong in the breeze, gong mournfully forever. You couldn't make the symbolic damnation of the 40 heroes. 40 restless souls,
right,
hanging down below the Islamic heavens, symbolically damned in Islam, gonging away forever in the wind, the snow. It's the most horrible thing. It's just absolutely disgusting.
I know, and I'm speechless. Usually I'm a better interviewer. And I have a terrible cold today, but you have brought to light information that I didn't even get from your websites, even though I knew it was all there. I mean, I thought you've explained, I feel like Paul Abdul. I can't even talk right now. You got any more bombshells for me? And my listeners, of course.
Well, I mean, the other bombshells are the equally stunning story of all of the just an ever-widening circle of people who know what's in the design and are taking every step they can to cover it up. I mean, it's absolutely crazy at this point.
Do you want to name names?
Yeah, I mean, in the Park Service, there's Superintendent Hanley, who's the superintendent of the Memorial Project. She's known about the mech orientation of the crescent from way back in the beginning of 2006 when I first sent them a complete report. I talked to her in a conference call with project manager Jeff Reinbold in April 2006. And we, on the subject of the mech orientation of the crescent, she said, it doesn't point exactly to Mecca. That's one we talked about. It has to be exact. So she knows that it points almost exactly to Mecca. And she's saying, well, we're not going to be concerned about it because we've decided we're just not going to be concerned about it unless it points exactly to Mecca. But then if you look at what she goes out and tells the public, she denies the Mecca orientation of the crescent in public. And the list of people who's doing that, it's everybody. I learned from Professor Tim Baird, an assistant professor of landscape architecture at University of Pennsylvania, at the July 2007 meeting where they gave final approval to this design. He told me that everybody in the project knows about the mech orientation of the crescent. And his excuse for it is, he said, I'm not going to be concerned about it unless you can prove intent, and you can never prove intent. So he presented this to me as like a fait accompli. He's proud of the fact that, you know, he's got this defense against concern that absolutely nothing can penetrate. I mean, he's just decided.
Yeah, but you've just prove intent. You've explained to myself and my listeners there's plenty of intent.
Oh, yeah.
And when I started this interview, I'm just thinking, I don't care if it points to Mecca or if it's off a little bit. It's a crescent in the middle of, a crash site, one of the most important days of our history. The average person like myself, and I am an average Joe, excuse me, doesn't need all this to back it up. I can see the inappropriateness of it just by seeing it.
Well, they made it. They put a disguise on it when they did their so-called redesign to try to blunt exactly that overt offensiveness of it. Right. So what they did was, in the architect's description, as I said, the path of Flight 93 breaks the circle, turns it into this giant crescent. Well, what they did in the so-called redesign was they added a little extra additional arc of trees, which Project Superintendent Hanley herself describes as putting a little addition, as leaving a chunk of the broken off part of the circle floating out across the part of the mouth of the crescent. So it's still a broken. It's still, thematically, they describe it exactly the same, that the flight path breaks the circle, turns it into this giant crescent, but now a part of the broken-off part of the circle remains floating out there.
Hmm.
And but if you look at it visually, it doesn't. It's the breaking point where the flight path crosses the upper crescent tip. It's a huge, impressive structure. It's a 1,000-foot-long, 50-foot-tall wall that gets broken by the flight path and ends there. And you can, architecturally, it's very clear where the crescent tip ends and where the circle gets broken and the tip of the crescent gets formed. But then they go out 100 yards and they start a little additional arc of trees and goes out. So for somebody who's looking into the crescent, this little extra arc of trees, you don't even see it. It's behind you. It's like planting some trees behind your prayer rug or planting some trees around a mosque. So in terms of the mosque architecture, it changes nothing. I mean, you can plant as many trees around a mosque as you want. It's still a mosque. But this is their excuse. Essentially, it's imagine you catch a hijacker with a bomb strapped to his chest trying to board an airplane. And what you do is, instead of hauling him off to jail, you send him to go back outside and say, try to get through again.
Uh-huh.
That's what they did. And what so he puts a fake beard on.
Right.
This time they wave him through. That's exactly what happened. There's a completely trivial change. Every single particle of that original Crescent of Embrace design remains completely intact in the redesign. All they did was add this little additional arc of trees, which represents, in their own description, a little broken off part of the circle floating out there.
Well, that's... Alec, we're out of time, but I want to give you a chance to... plug your book, plug your websites quickly for me, and I want to thank you so much, and I'm going to shoot you an email later this week, and I'm going to keep up on this, and I'll probably have you on again in the future. I definitely want to stay on top of this, and I'm going to see what I can do from here in Washington to draw some more attention to this.
Yeah, we need all the help we can get.
Well, go ahead and plug away.
Okay, so the book is Crescent of Betrayal, and you can download it, the whole thing, for free until the print edition comes out at crescentofbetrayal.com. And updates are being posted on my Error Theory blog at www.blogspot.errortheory.com, and that's Errortheory, Error Theory. And if you just Google, Flight 93 Crescent, you'll come across it, and it's easy to find this stuff.
Yeah, I know.
And it's just word's beginning to get out. I mean, we've been fighting on an awful lot of. I mean, the number of people who are working hard to deny and suppress this, and the fact that it includes some Flight 93 family members gives them a lot of credence, and it's really hard to break through.
But, right.
So I really appreciate being on here, and it's fun talking to you.
Well, I appreciate your input on this, and I'm going to research it a lot. Like I said, I got a terrible cold, so next time I have you on, I'll have a lot more great questions for you. But you certainly have informed myself and my listeners, so thanks so much, and I'll talk to you very soon.
That'd be great.
Take care.
Thanks a lot, Joe.
Bye-bye.
You. Bye.
And there you go, everybody. Well, that was my guest, Alec Rawls, by the way. Alec Rawls. I know I'm not one of those interviewers who likes to mention constantly what the guy's name is throughout the interview. Alec Rawls, and he's got the skinny on the Flight 93 Memorial. So check it out. Like he said, just Google it, and you will find everything from him. Everything from him and a lot of other people. So there you go. I'm speechless, and I got to take a break, and we're going to come back and wrap up the show. First of all, hey, Urban.
Hey, Joe.
Hey, you're breaking my rule, man. I'm not supposed to have
Right. I didn't want to talk to you on air, but did you get the emails that I sent you?
I haven't checked my email.
Man, I sent this guy's website to the memorial, and I got two emails back.
Oh, okay.
And I shot them to you, and I just wondered if I get any more information about this, do you want me to shoot them back? Because this guy asked me, he says, in the first one, he says, I sent him the thing, and it says in the message that I done, it says, interested, interesting, who are you? And it's signed Michael, and this is from M.L. Emerson. And then the second message, it says, what do you think of my memorial?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, man. I mean, I got somebody here, and I sent him a couple of things listening to the show and saying, hey, about the sundial, you know, who was the architect in this, and who designed this? And I haven't got no more back yet, but if I do, you want me to send them your way?
Absolutely, Irvin.
Yeah, this guy, you hit a gold mine tonight.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, great show, man. Keep it up.
Thank you. Well, there you go. So we're lighting a fire out there. My fellow Joe Americans, like I said, I got to take a quick break, and I guess we'll come back with a little bit of this day in history. Joe Radio, 106.7 WJFK.